Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
This is NPR News. I'm Chris Farrell, in for Carrie Miller. Today is tax day, now that the IRS has its computers running again. Phew! Now, so what I want to talk about? Taxes for 2018. No, I haven't lost my mind. I'm not trying to be cruel. Here's the thing. You've gathered all your financial information to do your taxes online or with an accountant. With the data readily available, now may be a good time for some financial reflection. The information allows you to review your spending, your saving, and your giving plans for the remainder of the year. But there's another reason to focus on taxes. Thanks to last year's tax law overhaul, several big changes take effect this year. If you're self-employed, a business, or an individual, you want to understand how the new tax law will affect you, and you'll want to plan ahead. So what do you want to know about the new tax law? Do you use tax time to review your household finances? Let us know. Call us at 651-227-6000. Toll free, 800-242-2828. And you can also tweet me at CFarrellEcon. That's at CFarrellEcon. My guest is Lynette Calfani Cox. She's the Money Coach, a personal finance expert. She's written several books, including the bestseller, Zero Debt, The Ultimate Guide to Financial Freedom. Welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me on the show.
We're also joined by Paul Gutterman. He's director of the Masters of Business Taxation at the Carlson School of Management. He also joins us by phone. How are you doing?
I'm good. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning. So, Lynette, let me start with you. What do you think of this idea of using tax time to take stock of your household finances?
I love the idea of using tax time to really reassess your overall personal finances because, honestly, a lot of us have been honed in on numbers. We've probably drilled down and given our accountants or CPAs, or even if you just were a do-it-yourself or and looked online, you probably took a really hard look, a close look at how, as you mentioned, your spending went for the year, how much you paid in property taxes, how much you paid perhaps in local deductions, that kind of thing, what your charitable giving was like for the year. And so not only is it a time for us to get financially organized because there's so much record keeping involved, but it is, I think, a really salient time to do some financial projections for the rest of 28 and into the future. And that's a really smart thing to do.
Yeah. And here's the other thing that struck me. You know, we all do financial resolutions at the new year, right? I mean, it's always top of the list when people are doing their New Year's resolutions. Money always involved. I'm going to pay down my credit card debt. I'm going to create a budget. I'm not going to waste money doing X, Y, or Z. And then, you know, time passes. So is this kind of a way of revisiting your New Year's resolutions and getting a little more energy toward them?
Absolutely, because as you mentioned, not only do people make these sort of grandiose resolutions sometimes, they kind of think, new year, new me, I'm going to get it right this time. But I think, you know, sort of a third of the way through the year is also a good inflection point to take progress and to check and to say, is what I said I wanted to do in the beginning of the year being executed on? If I said I wanted to save more money or to start contributing to my 401k plan or to up my retirement contributions or to finally set aside money in my kids' college fund like I know I'm going to need down the road, have I actually done that? And if not, what's holding me back or what's to prevent me from getting started now? Or if I've fallen off the wagon, so to speak, how can I get back on track? Again, good time to take stock.
So, Paul, a lot happened in this the new tax law, and you know there's a lot of discussion. I know I was involved in it about things that we thought were going to be in the tax law. They didn't end up in the tax law, and then there were some unexpected changes that we didn't really pay a whole lot of attention to, and they became part of the tax law. So how big a change was the tax law that was signed into signed in December?
Well, there were lots of changes, no question about it. There's not necessarily a theme either. You know, it's not simplification. It is they gave some things, they took away some things. So pretty much everyone's affected. I don't think there's a person out there that wasn't affected by the 2017 Act.
Okay, so I have to ask you, whatever happened to this postcard that I was supposed to be able to fill my taxes out on?
It would never happen. It's a great political, stumping point for politicians. But the truth of the matter is we live in a complicated world, and politicians can't keep their hand out of the honeypot and trying to figure out ways to help their constituents. And so it's just never going to happen.
Now, I know your expertise is in the business of taxation, but I want to ask you about this recommendation that's out there for employees to check their tax withholding?
Oh, absolutely. Theoretically, in February, the withholding tables were changed so that it's supposed to reflect, assuming that the information that you gave in 2017 is correct. But as I said, a lot of things have changed. People who might have itemized through 2017 may not be itemizing in the future. So, it is a good idea for everyone to recheck. When you start your employment, you fill out a form that kind of estimates. It's a good time to revisit that to see whether the withholding in 2018 is truly going to reflect your situation.
So, Lynette, are you getting calls or conversations with people that are just sort of confused by what's going on right now?
Not so much on the tax front, but a lot of people who are affected by the other side of, kind of what we talked about at the outset in terms of trying to increase personal savings, trying to say, oh, let me tackle my debt or improve my credit score. I think, the tax plan, it was, kind of rushed through right there at the end of the year. And I do think, though, there's been confusion, and I think a lot more people probably said, here, I'm going to turn this over to the pros, because a lot changed. I mean, the personal exemptions were eliminated, right? We have this new cap in terms of state and local tax deductions at $10,000, which, certainly affects folks like us. I'm in the Northeast, in the New Jersey, New York area. There were other things like doubling the child tax credit, doubling of the standard deduction, which, as your guest mentioned before, it means that, a lot fewer people are going to be itemizing. So I think confusion probably has been kind of in the very top of the year. But I think at this point, people probably just said, let me send it to a tax pro to get it done. I'm willing to bet money there are far fewer do-it-yourselfers this year, even though we know that the IRS says, the vast majority of people file their tax returns electronically now. So I think it's going to take a little bit for all of this to shake out, just like the folks who are supposed to get kind of a pay increase, right, in their paychecks. A negligible amount. I'm not sure if people have really felt it in that way. I think on the corporate side, those employees whose companies have either given one-time bonuses or bumped up pay by a bit, they are more likely to feel it as opposed to just saying, okay, I have a, $12 or $15 a week increase in my weekly paycheck.
So do you have a question for Lynette or Paul? Do you want to understand better about the tax changes or, making a financial plan for the rest of the year? Give us a call, 651-227-6000, toll free at 800-242-2828. Paul, one of the areas that I think there's a lot of confusion about is dealing with what's called, pass-through businesses, S-corps, limited liability companies. So, first of all, give us a brief definition of the pass-through.
Well, almost all businesses that are not publicly traded are pass-through. So it can be larger companies, but as you said, S corporations or small business corporations, there's some limitations on who can do that. Limited liability companies, It can be even a one-person limited liability company, or, you know, essentially taking the place of partnerships because everyone has limited liability in a limited liability company. So pretty much all businesses, as I said, except for, you know, publicly traded operating companies, are set up these days as a flow-through entity, which means there's no entity-level taxation. Rather, the income flows through to the owners.
So I've gotten a lot of questions just from colleagues and friends and people that I meet, and they're solopreneurs, they're freelancers, and typically they just, you know, use their Social Security number. And the question they've been asking, should they become a limited liability company, an LLC?
Well, this is really not as much a tax question, because you're going to get taxed essentially the same way. This is more from a business perspective. Almost everyone would advise to set up as a limited liability company in order to shield your personal assets or distinguish your personal assets from your business assets. Otherwise, your personal assets are subject to, on a lawsuit, somebody could get at those.
Okay. So,
and just to piggyback on that concept, I think some people are confused perhaps about the way in which they might qualify for this new 20% deduction in terms of you being able to, deduct up to 20% of your net business income if you are a pass-through owner. There's a distinction between the mom-and-pop business that you mentioned, just the kind of sole proprietor or whatever. That's still a pass-through entity. But as your other guest was just highlighting, those folks would be eligible potentially to get that 20% net deduction. The difference, though, is that if you have a limited liability company or a limited liability partnership, that's where you're getting the extra protection for, yourself, et cetera, against lawsuits and other things. But all the pass-through entities, it's a whole different question to say which form should my business take, given whatever industry you're in. But if you have a partnership, an S-Corp, an LLC, an LLP, a sole proprietorship, all those qualify and count as pass-through. Now, there's some other, finer things, and I'll leave to your other guests to drill into the weeds on that in terms of which professionals, because I know they made some carve-outs and whatnot, who does and doesn't qualify on that basis. But just, having a sole proprietorship, that doesn't preclude you from being able to deduct that extra 20% under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act.
So
and that's
go ahead,
correct.
Paul.
And it, as pointed out, that is a huge issue and planning point to make, because there are a lot of weeds in that, and you have to be really careful of how you navigate that through.
So now I want to take a call, because Dave from Minneapolis has been patiently waiting. And so, Dave, what's your question?
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to ask, I paid the property tax for 2018 proactively in 2017 in anticipation of the 10,000 limit. But they're still not clear as to if that will help. Can you help me understand if this doing so will help me out?
Paul?
Yeah, for the $10,000 limit, it's just on your Schedule A, all right, assuming you itemize your deductions rather than take a standard deduction, that's where you would deduct your state and local income taxes, property taxes. And so, particularly those in large, or high-income states, people tend to deduct a lot of their, obviously, a lot of state income taxes along with the property taxes. And they're just lifting that to $10,000. So you simply, if you have $18,000 in state and local taxes, you can't deduct those. You used to be able in 2017 to deduct the whole amount, but now you're going to be limited to $10,000. That's going to then affect how many people are going to itemize, because the standard deduction is doubling as well. And so you're just, a lot of people are less likely to itemize their deductions than in the past because of that.
Okay, so let's go go ahead, Lynette. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, since you did do it, as I did, I think there was this mad dash in late December for so many folks to go ahead and prepay their property tax bills. I remember the IRS, kind of gave some guidance at the sort of end of the year.
Right.
And
they basically said, you know, and again, this is in layman's terms, you know, they kind of said that if it was already assessed, if your local township or municipality already billed you for this, then yeah, not a problem. You can take that tax deduction if you went ahead and prepaid. But they pretty much said, you know, the state, local law, all that determines when a property, when a tax is assessed on a property. So I feel like you'll probably be on safe ground. And again, I'm not a tax expert. I'm not a CPA. All the disclaimers up front. But if you certainly got that bill or that assessment, and frankly, a lot of municipalities, especially many here in New Jersey, they did in fact do just that.
They tried
to help, you know, us out by assessing or making sure if it was just normally done, they got that bill out, you know, out the door to folks before December 31st. So, you know, again, if the a county or municipality assessed property taxes to be, you know, due, say, from you know, July 1st, 2017, all the way up to, say, June 30th, 2018, and let's say they gave you, you know, a couple of installments that you could pay it, maybe one at the end of the year or maybe at the end of September, and the other one, say, in January 2018, but it was, again, covering you through the June 30th, 2018 timeframe. If you did go ahead and pay all of that mm-hmm. by December 31st, again, according to what the IRS said, yes, that's allowable because the county or municipality assessed it, and, you know, you got the bill for it, and then you went ahead and paid it.
Paid it. So let's go to Jan, and it's in Kissholm. Did I say it right? Nope. Okay, so we're not going to Jan. We're going to go to David, who is in St. Paul. And that I do know how to pronounce. How are you doing, David?
I'm doing fine. Thank you for taking my call.
And your question?
My question relates to charitable giving.
Okay.
I'm wondering if there's a tax benefit of trying to maximize my gift by setting up a donor-advised fund and making that gift every other year rather than every year.
And why would you skip every – why would you go to the every other year?
I think that there's been a reduction. It motivate me to itemize in some years and not itemize in other years.
Okay. Paul, what do you think?
Well, yes, the concept of every other year is exactly that, that if you aren't necessarily itemizing in every year – you can essentially build up, you know, your charitable contributions. And so, you know, that does make some sense. The only change in charitable deductions in 2018 is a little more generous in your limitation. If you're giving money essentially to a public charity, you can give 60% of your adjusted gross income, where it used to be 50%. Otherwise, the rules are the same, but as the caller pointed out, you may not, you know, be able to itemize. You have to itemize your deductions in order to take a charitable contribution. So setting something up so that you can accumulate your – you don't have to set something up. I mean, you could simply, you know – give every other year your amounts, and you'd be in the same boat, essentially.
And Lynette, isn't there growing interest in giving money to these donor advised funds? So give an example, that would be like a Fidelity or Vanguard or TIA. They have essentially looks like a mutual fund, but it's for your charitable contributions. Is that one of the effects of this tax law change?
I think that has been one of the effects. And you mentioned Fidelity, Schwab. They run, frankly, two of the biggest donor advised funds in the country. And, you know, you can give cash. You can give securities, especially appreciated securities, which my understanding is even better. But the reason, I think, to hone in on your question, people are saying, is this going to, you know, cause some people to want to do the donor advised route or versus the kind of charity route. And, you know, kind of depends on, you know, what your intentions are. If you want a kind of a consistent cash flow and whatnot. But I think at the end of the day, probably the thing to for people who are in that position to donate, to focus on, perhaps, is that higher benefit to you know, people who are willing to contribute, as your other guest mentioned, because that 10% difference in adjusted gross income could mean you could, you know, have a lot more that you can give, whereas before your tax benefit was capped at that 50% level in terms of AGI. Now you can, you know, get it, the cap is 60%. So, you know, if you, you know, made $1 million, you know, in 2017 and you donated, if you were just fabulously wealthy and you donated, say, $600,000, you'd only be able to write off $500,000, you know, from last year, from 2017. But now that extra $100,000, because you can go up to $60,000, can also be written off or carry forward at least to the next year. So, you know, that's, I think, the kind of big change in there to focus in on.
And, Paul, I want to ask you, when you know, back in January, February, you know, when the tax law had been passed, and there were a number of conversations, articles. Should everyone become a corporation? I mean, if you have something of a business, and now that we've had a little bit of time to reflect, should everyone become a corporation?
You're talking about, again, a regular C corporation rather than
correct to take advantage of the lower tax rate.
Right. And there was a lot of, you know, speculation about that. But as people ran the numbers, it turns out the answer is still no. There's some cases where it might work. But for most people, I think the answer is no. You're better off remaining as a flow-through entity. Oh. Again, the problem with a regular corporation is they essentially get double taxed. They get taxed at the corporate level. And at some point, you need to distribute those earnings down to the owners. And in that instance, you're paying dividend, income at that point.
So, Paul, as people are doing their checklist for taxes in 2018, obviously very different from 2017, what they've just gone through, what are some of the things you'd put on the top of your checklist?
Well, I guess they go through and look at your 2017 return and look at what benefits are going to be gained and what benefits are going to be lost. So, personal exemptions, as was noted, if you're losing. So all the dependents, if you had a lot of dependents, that's all going away. On the other hand, standard deduction is increasing, but that may or may not affect you depending on whether you're already itemizing and how much your itemized deductions are. The child credit, though, is increasing, so that kind of offsets the exemptions to some extent. The tax rates are all changing, so most people are going to be in a lower tax bracket. So you can kind of start sensing, there's certain things, employee business expenses have gone away, tax preparation fees and all that stuff have gone away. So there's a lot of gains, there's a lot of losses, and depending on each person's, situation, they may be coming out ahead, but a lot of people are going to come out behind, surprisingly. Everybody sits here thinking, okay, I'm getting a tax cut here, but that's not necessarily true. There's a lot of people that are actually going to pay more taxes in 2018 on the same income than what they had in 2017. So without reviewing each situation, it's kind of hard to know. And that's why the tax professionals, you can kind of think of this act as, full employment tax professionals, because everybody's going to be busy in 2018 helping their clients, plan and figure out where they stand.
And Lynette, I want to ask you with, all the information gathered with this 2017. So, is now a good time to take that information and create this thing called the budget?
Absolutely. And, unfortunately, some people see a budget as a nasty little B word. They kind of figure like, oh, living on a budget is so restrictive. It's all about what I can't buy, what I can't do, what I can't have, which, of course, is the wrong mindset. And I often tell people to think about budgeting as creating your own spending plan of action. It's really an empowerment tool to help you to make better decisions, right? To help you to decide what is the priority for me or my family. So the budget is really about, let's take a look at inflows and outflows. Let's make sure that we understand, you know, where all the money is going relative to what we say we value. So I'm a big believer in people spending in alignment with their values. So if people tell me, oh, my kids are the most important thing in my life, I really love my kids, or I value travel. I believe that, you know, travel is good for the soul, or I'm so focused on, you know, being debt-free or being able to retire early, then I want to see their cash flow and their money and their spending directed towards those things, towards the kids' college fund, for example, or towards setting aside money for a vacation or travel or the world cruise they wanted to always take, or, you know, early retirement, et cetera. Because at the end of the day, if you're not really actively financial planning, you're going to wind up like so many older people who get to retirement who have little to no savings, and we've, you know, heard all the dire statistics, and you know, you're going to be living off of Social Security either exclusively or mostly, and that's not going to be a pretty picture. You know, the average Social Security check is only about, you know, $1,100 or $1,200 or so, and it's definitely not adequate for the average person to live on. So better to budget, financially plan, and to be proactive with your finances now so that, you know, down the road you can have even heightened and a greater sense of financial security.
And I also think you've seen the statistics, but if you look at credit card debt, and for understandable reasons, I mean, we have a low unemployment rate, people feeling a little more secure in their jobs, there's a lot of delayed gratification. But I think this may also be a time to think about reducing debts, because this economy has been growing for a considerable period of time. And, you know, you want to be sort of leaning against the wind when times are good to prepare yourself to be, you know, lower your risk for bad times.
That's right. And I mean, if you look at the amount of debt this country has, it's just staggering. And let's not even talk about, you know, federal. I just mean at the consumer level. You know, we have over $1 trillion in auto loan debt right now, which is a record level. About $1.3 trillion in student loan debt, again, unprecedented levels. We're pushing $1 trillion in credit card debt as well, according to Federal Reserve data. And that even exceeds, you know, what we had during the Great Recession. And so it's kind of shocking that we're kind of back at that point. Sometimes I feel like we haven't learned our lesson when we go through these cycles. But again, I teach people that not only is debt obviously bad for you financially, but and it's, you know, going to hurt your wealth and your ability to grow your net worth, et cetera, but it's actually bad for you in so many other ways that I think people don't realize, and that, frankly, I don't think is discussed often enough. It's bad on your marriage. You know, we know that couples that divorce, 70% of them cite financial strife and money arguments as one factor in the breakup. It's bad for your health. Debt causes you a huge amount of physical stress, emotional stress. Debt makes you depressed. And then we had this study that just came out this month, as a matter of fact, which is, you know, as we know, Financial Literacy Month, but the Journal of the American Medical Association came out with a report this month saying that people who are in debt, you know, with neither no assets or negative net worth, are more likely to die, 67% more likely to die than people who are well off financially, as are people who've had a sudden drop in wealth, some kind of a financial shock. Their chances of an increased death increased by 50%. So, you know, if you don't want to do it to have a bigger, you know, bank account, do it to have a longer life or less stress or a more solid marriage, but get out of debt in 2018.
So, Paul, I want to – this is a little bit of an aside, but on a slightly more optimistic front, considering all the tax changes and what is going on, are you having people pounding down your door to get a degree in business taxation?
I don't know about pounding down the door, but, you know, when a lot of people are busy. You know, most of our program, you know, are working tax professionals, so they're out there working pretty hard at the moment. But, you know, clearly, you know, all the tax changes really have affected, as I said, every business, whether it's international corporation down to the individual level. Everybody's been affected. So there's a lot of interest, a lot of, you know, demand to figure out, you know, how do we plan for the 2017 Act going forward.
So I guess this is, as you mentioned, this has been the Full Employment Act for the accountant industry.
Absolutely. They're out working, you know, yes, you know, busy season theoretically, you know, is ending, but, you know, it's going to continue throughout the year. Just it's a lot of activity. Every client needs to get sat down with and thought through, you know, what the effect of the act is.
Well, thank you very much. I thank both of you. This has been wonderful. Great conversation.
Thank you.
Lynette Galfani-Cox is the Money Coach and Personal Finance Expert. Paul Gutterman is Director of the Masters of Business Taxation at the Carlson School of Management.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Kerry at KERRINPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.